Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we've obviously spent most of 2016 talking about the presidential race, and for good reason. But as we've also mentioned from time to time, it's a very important year for other races as well, particularly the Senate. Republicans finally have the majority back, but they're playing a lot of defense because of how well Republicans did in 2010. 6 years later, you got to defend a lot of those seats, about two-thirds of the seats up being held by Republicans, most running for re-election, but some retiring. And one of your favorite senators, if not the favorite, is Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, good friend of National Review. He was elected in 2010 over Joe Sestak. Joe Sestak trying to run against him and beat him again. But as you point out in the Jolt today, new numbers from Quinnipiac University show things are looking pretty good so far for Pat Toomey. He does fall short of the 50% threshold, but in head-to-heads against both Democratic candidates, he's got healthy leads. 8 points over Sestak, 47 to 39, and he leads the other Democrat, Katie McGinty, 47 to 38. He's competitive among independents, even leading against McGinty among independents. And overall, he's got a pretty wide margin on approval and favorability. So he has to be one of the Democrats' prime targets this year. But so far, whether it's just he's doing a good job or the Democrats couldn't get a strong candidate, Pat Toomey looks in very good shape right now.
Yeah. Now, we should not fool ourselves into thinking this is going to be easy. This is a state that is purple at best. You are hearing some discussion amongst Republican consultants to say that the demographic changes in Pennsylvania may actually be getting better for them over time, that as the population ages, it still remains outside of Philadelphia and some parts of Pittsburgh a heavily white state. The big question was, can you win those Philadelphia suburbs, the Bucks County areas? And this is where was at the core of Pat Toomey's win back in 2010, a midterm election. Presidential election, turnout's going to be a lot higher. Turnout in places like Philadelphia is going to be a lot higher. It's a tougher bar to clear for Republicans. But based on these numbers, Pat Toomey is close to where he wants to be, if not exactly where he wants to be. The Democrats have a considerable amount of ground to make up. And the other thing which really struck me as interesting, Greg, I went back and I checked. So far, Pat Toomey has not trailed a poll in this entire cycle, which is not what you'd expect to see in a state like this. Again, Pennsylvania's purple at best. Toomey has something in the neighborhood like a 94% ACU rating, meaning he votes pretty conservatively. He had one big disagreement with some the NRA and some other folks in the Second Amendment rights community when he had the Toomey Mansion background check bill. Deep in my most cynical hearts, I kind of wonder if you take this kind of one high-profile deviation from the rest of your party, and that creates the impression that you are an independent and that you're not a lockstep party man, and you defy them every now and then. And yet, in the meantime, you can still accumulate a very conservative voting record. So, a somewhat sunny outlook for Pat Toomey right now. We will keep an eye on this, but not a bad place to be in a year when so many things have gone wrong for Republicans.
No, not at all. And obviously, the Republican presidential nominee is going to have to run fairly strong. That'll help Toomey if that can happen. Wasn't there a Democratic attorney general who was supposed to be running against him this year and then ran into all sorts of ethics problems?
Yeah. I think when she started using her office to go after her own in releasing confidential state emails and releasing every regrettable email that had ever been sent her way, the scorched earth tactics, lo and behold, doesn't work well, doesn't build party unity.
Amazing. All right, on to the bad martini now. And this is a horrific bad martini, one that we've discussed a lot over the past couple of years. But things are not only not getting better, they seem to be getting worse. This is in National Review, courtesy of Pete Hegseth, veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan. You see him on Fox News all the time. He says the Veterans Affairs scandal headlines speak for themselves. The Daily Beast: veteran burned himself alive outside VA clinic. AZFamily.com: dead veterans canceling their own appointments. New York Times: report finds sharp increase in veterans denied VA benefits. More than 125,000 U.S. veterans are being denied crucial mental health services. And, quote, Rubio Miller asked committee to back VA accountability bills. Are these headlines from 2014 when the VA scandal broke? The sad answer is no. All these headlines and so many more are from the past 10 days, a fact that also speaks for itself. Later on, he says, quote, today, healthcare wait times for veterans remain unacceptably high. In fact, they have gone up in many places. Whistleblowers continue to say that records of VA wait times are still being manipulated across the country, with the VA's own inspector general recently finding that over half of VA medical facilities investigated still use improper scheduling. On the benefits side, while the number of backlog disability claims has come down, the wait for first-time applicants remains on average 389 days, and it's higher in other parts of the country. Jim, all the promises, speeches were made, so problems were assumed to be solved. Not the case.
Raise your hand if you're really stunned that a bold, sweeping promise of reform from President Obama has not panned out. I suppose, you know, cynicism and experience has told us not to expect great things from this president. Remember, he ran in 2008 talking about how badly served our veterans were. And this was a big part of how he was going to make government work and all that stuff. And well, here we are. It's not shocking that the Hegseth report is really eye-opening in just how little progress has been made. You know, we've seen these little, you might hear about the VA every now and then, and you get these little stories about people still waiting for care, you know, long list, disorganization, not knowing who's supposed to get what kind of care. Frustrating and depressing to see it all pulled together by Hegseth really does indicate the promises from this administration mean nothing. There is no problem too big that they are not capable of ignoring.
And Congress has held numbers of hearings on this, calling out the VA for not firing people, even though they have the power now after that legislation was passed, promising to get things done. They're dragging their feet on getting data to Congress and answers to simple, basic questions, and we're just not getting answers on this. So this is another issue that could resonate greatly in the presidential campaign, and we'll see how the candidates continue to handle that. And speaking of the presidential campaign, Jim, it was obviously a good night for Ted Cruz in Wisconsin on Tuesday, not a good night for Trump, considering that he led there not too many weeks prior to the primary. Now, of course, they shift to New York, where Trump is expected to do very well, and then some other northeastern primaries where he's probably the favorite. But Aaron Burnett on CNN was pointing out the results of a new Washington Post poll to Michael Cohen of the Trump campaign and pointing out that Trump's got a lot of problems with a lot of different groups. And here is the exchange.
Non-whites, 81% unfavorable rating. Among Hispanics, 85% unfavorable. As we know, among women, two-thirds unfavorable. What are you going to turn those numbers around?
First of all, I don't agree with those
numbers. All those numbers stay that way.
Aaron, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't agree with any of those polls and any of those numbers. The media, this liberal media, comes after Mr. Trump on everything. No matter what he says, they're
that's
going
not
to
the liberal
find
media.
Something.
That's just a poll.
You know, and the poll is, as far as I'm concerned, manipulated in order to come up with these. Women do not have an issue with Mr. Trump.
I think a lot of them do have an issue with Mr. Trump. But, Jim, it's so fascinating. For the first 7 months of this campaign, you couldn't do an interview with Trump without him saying, did you see the polls? Did you see the polls? He had every individual poll margin memorized. But as soon as they start to turn strongly against him, the polls are all rigged.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Folks who listen to this podcast a lot, who are kind of diehard political junkies, we can remember the times the polls have been really, really off.
Sure.
You know, New Hampshire primary 2008 looked like Obama was going to win and Hillary won pretty by a considerable margin. 2010, Republicans outperformed it. 2012, the Romney campaign was confident. They thought they were going to do just fine. Turns out a lot more Democratic voters turned out than these pollsters' models expected, and Obama won pretty handily. Then in 2014, probably the most far-off one, in which you had, you know, close races in places like Kansas, and the Republican ended up winning by quite solid margins. And at one point, you know, remember the buzz that Mitch McConnell was in trouble and McConnell wins by like 14 points. So we can point to years where like, okay, but when you have 3/4 of women having an unfavorable view of Donald Trump, you can adjust it like, you know, it's going to be off by 6 points, get off by 10 points. Let's knock off, you know, 15 points out of that. That still means 60% of women have an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump. Like the interesting thing is this assertion that a poll is an opinion. It's an argument. Well, no, it's a data, right? Now, we can argue about whether the data pool is big enough. We can argue about whether the data pool is representative. There is such a thing as push polls and polls in which you kind of say, you know, do you support handsome, heroic American Ted Cruz or that obnoxious, woman-hating weasel Donald Trump? Who do you support? You know, people are going to, you know. But most of these pollsters are pretty darn respectable. The sample sizes are pretty darn big. And then perhaps the most important thing is that you're getting it consistently from pollster after pollster. Even if pollster one is making a mistake, pollster two probably isn't going to make the same mistake. And then pollster three. There is this desire to see what you want to see. And if you see something you don't want to see, you try to explain it away. You try to hand wave it. You try to say, well, it can't really be that way. And you look for the things. Well, is there something that the polls that I don't like all have in common? And is there something the polls that I do like have in common? Well, you know, look, most pollsters aren't putting a very big likely voter screen on this. And I suppose it's possible that once you put the likely voter screen on this, instead of 3/4 of American women not liking Donald Trump, you know, maybe it's down to 70%. Greg, maybe 69, 68% of women. And whoa, then we're doing terrific. No, it kind of shows the sheer, just flat out, like almost giddy, defiant denial of reality that is going on with the Trump campaign here. And it does strike, I've been, you know, look, my longstanding, you know, vehement, probably frothing at the mouth opposition to Donald Trump has been pretty clear. But I look at this and this, you see responses like this and it begins to feel like a cult of personality, Greg. I mean, when you start insisting that every pollster is out to get Donald Trump, just put on the Nike sneakers, put on the purple robes, and wait for Comet Hail Bop, because that's the kind of thinking you're engaging in at this point.
No, we were talking about that yesterday with Ian. We just mentioned if the polls are favorable for Trump, they're gospel. If they're not favorable for Trump, they're garbage. And then yesterday, Roger Stone was suggesting that every state that Ted Cruz has won, there's been massive voter fraud, but only in those states.
Yeah, the philosophy of Donald Trump is one that I'd like to see less of in politics instead of more in politics, which is that when I win, it means everything was fair and square. When I lose, the other guy cheated. That the idea is that there is no way I could ever legitimately lose. The only fair outcome, the only true outcome, the only plausible outcome is my eternal victory every time, 100% of the time, et cetera. I am incapable of mistakes. I am incapable of being the second choice of people. I can never do anything wrong. Everything that goes wrong for me must be malfeasance. It must be other people. Like this is kind of like paranoid delusions, Greg. This is not, you know, the way normal people go about their lives. And it's bizarre. It's frustrating. And here's the thing. And it's interesting to see Roger Stone saying this, but then also separately saying that Trump doesn't have enough of an infrastructure in some of these states going forward. Gee, do you think there's a connection there? If you don't see the problem accurately, you can't solve the problem because you're always chasing the false, the false explanation instead of the true explanation. And in this Trump, if you think the problem is, oh, rampant voting fraud, but by the way, which apparently only Ted Cruz figured out how to do.
Yes. And only in certain states.
Nobody else ever did. And that the Trump people would never think of doing, you know, all of these advantages only work to Ted Cruz's advantage. And none of these ever, you know, bounces the way. It's like watching the game with a friend, Greg, who always believes that every time his team loses, it's a bad call. There was holding on that. There was, you know, traveling. There was, you know, this is an insufferable all or nothing viewpoint that, you know, not being a Trump fan. Hey, it's no skin off my nose. Right. It's only going to hurt him in the end if he can't see the problems in his own campaign. And he prefers to think that, you know, all the polls are lying and all these things are true and every loss is a result of voter fraud. And, you know. Denial, I'm sure it's very psychologically comforting, but no, it doesn't really get you anywhere. So that's our life lesson for Thursday, folks.
The more you know. Tomorrow's Friday. That's good news.
Look, hey, you know what else? Do you know why it's a good day, Greg?
Why?
Because the trailer for Star Wars Rogue One came out. And now, Greg, we are entering the world in which there is never going to be a year without a Star Wars movie. Never mind the old actors. This is all new actors, all new characters, not tied to the J.J. Abrams trilogy. They're just going to keep making them forever, and they're always going to look good, Greg. So that's our gleeful extra Galaxy Far, Far Away fourth martini today.
Yeah, that's a fun shot to end the day. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.